Hello, everyone. This is Samira Alexander from Second Act Disrupted. Welcome back. A second episode today with Lisa Laws, who is an expert in conscious uncoupling. I thought it was very, very important to have this interview because she was my therapist, my friend, and my therapist when I was going through a divorce in my 40s. And it gave a different perspective on divorce and splitting up. The word divorce has a very negative connotation. And when I was going through my breakup, there was a lot of emotion, a lot of hurt and pain. And even just saying that word divorce to people, you know, created a different kind of feeling. And I just felt it was totally unsupported. But I was very fortunate to have Lisa in my life at that time. And at that time, she was doing her master's in conscious uncoupling. And it really helped me understand that, you know, we can really look at splitting up in a slightly different manner and rather be bitter, angry, and upset, and to hold on to those emotions, which really don't help us at all. And of course, we all go through those emotions when we're going through a divorce, but we don't need to be there. We don't need to choose to be there. And there are other ways to look at a breakup and to do it in a more healthier manner. So Lisa, I just want you to welcome anyway, first and foremost to Second Act Disrupted. And then I just want to say, if you could actually really talk to us about what does conscious uncoupling really mean in your eyes? I know that Gwyneth Paltrow did that and she really brought it to the forefront when she was splitting up from Chris Martin. But obviously I haven't heard about it from anyone else apart from yourself. So really good if you could tell me more about that and my viewers.
Sure. Hi, Samira, and thank you for asking me here today. So conscious uncoupling was a phrase coined by Catherine Woodward Thomas and then later Gwyneth Paltrow when she was, as you said, divorcing Chris Martin, you know, used that. And, you know, really it's about divorcing or breaking up, you know, using kindness and compassion and really focusing on taking the higher ground. One of you may not. And so that there's really personal transformation. And also, you know, if you've got children and things like that, then there's an ability to have a sort of non-bitter, non-resentful, you know, relationship moving forward. So, you know, it's consciousness is really bringing awareness so that it's not just reactive vengefulness, bitterness, resentment, because a lot of us are really emotionally hijacked when we are in a breakup, particularly if we haven't initiated it. Catherine Woodward Thomas, in a way, commercialized this topic, but a wonderful lady called Debbie Ford, many years before, and I think it was the 90s, wrote a book called Spiritual Divorce, which really was about having your breakup be a vehicle for personal transformation. There was another lady, and I forget her name now, she also wrote a book called Conscious Divorce. So this kind of whole idea of instead of breaking down during a breakup, you know, that it be a vessel for breakthroughs. And when I was going to say, so I chose as part of my theses when I was doing my master's, I chose actually to look at compassion in conscious uncoupling because of my own divorce. And I was just curious what that actually meant, what it meant to have a conscious uncoupling. And it was, it really matched a lot of what had been written about people taking the higher ground, people really putting spiritual principles before the need for vengeance. And then we come out of it with more dignity and definitely personal growth.
So, I mean, for me, I mean, obviously it was a shock when my ex-husband and myself kind of made that decision in the end. Although we were going through a lot of problems, I think still it was still painful and hurtful, the fact that we were splitting up. There wasn't a shock in terms of him cheating on me or me having an affair or there weren't any children involved. But so for me, I think to some level, even though it was painful and hurtful, you know, it seemed to be slightly smoother to go through the whole process. And obviously we worked together, and I had to, the whole list of emotions that I went through. But still, it, you know, and also I think at one point for myself, I think it was important for me to have forgiveness more for myself, which came up when we worked together and for your part of your thesis, it, for myself, so that I wasn't holding on to any negativity. And so I think for me, I figured that out, that forgiveness was really good for me, not for the, for my ex-husband, but for more for myself. So in ways, yeah, on some levels, I was being a bit selfish, but it also meant that I was breaking up in a healthier way, in a healthier way. But that's me. And what happens when you're, you know, I've come across clients who, you know, they've been married for 30 years and they've been with somebody who's a narcissistic, or they've come up, they find out that they've been in a happy marriage, or they think they've been in a happy marriage, and they found out that their husband's been, or the wife has been cheating, and have, you know, and they've been hurt, very hurt. How, what's the process of conscious uncoupling in this kind of, in those kind of scenarios? How does one even start trying to conscious uncouple when there's so much hurt and pain when it comes to when one of the partners, the spouses, has you know, been unfaithful or betrayed the other in the marriage?
Okay, so there's a few principles, really. You know, I guess first is really asking yourself the question, okay, if I spit bile all over this, mm-hmm, and try and get back at that person, which is the instinct, mm-hmm, for a lot of people, what's that going to do for me? What's that going to do for our relationship? You know, particularly if there's kids involved. So, you know, there's the foundation principle is non-victimization. Now, we're never going to do that perfectly, and we can bounce from it. But if we hold the torch for non-victimization, then a question would be, okay, he's 95% wrong, awful. I'd use a swear word in here, but I won't. but maybe there's 5% that I can take responsibility for.
Mm.
Where did I check out of the relationship? Where was I not available for him? Where was I avoidant with, you know, intimacy? And I don't really mean sex. I mean, you know, intimacy, that may have contributed to him doing that bad thing.
Yeah.
So even though all of us wants to say it's all his or her fault, you know, really the power lies in taking our 5% or 2%. And that's got the power of an atom, because when we can start looking at that, one is we don't ever have to do that again. Then that becomes the vehicle for growth, because just resentment at others isn't going to, in fact, bring growth. It brings relief, you know, in the moment, but then the chances are we're going to do that all over again.
Mm.
So there's that part. And then there are, you know, if you've been with a narcissist, for example, for many years, and thank goodness you wake up and don't want to do it anymore, then maybe the responsibility is, where did I self-abandon and overgive? And what was that really? Was that really my loving heart? Or was that manipulation because I never thought I was good enough?
Yeah.
And again, you know, that is the portal into doing a lot of self-development and self-growth. And so the non-victimization has two things. One is looking at my part in it. And the second is, okay, this horrible thing has happened. Who do I want to be in this now?
Mm.
And then the invitation is to take a more spiritual ground. Say, you know, do I really want to lower myself to his or her level?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I want to say, you know what, I want to really use this as an opportunity to really stretch myself to do the right thing.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean signing over all your money and all the rest of it, because that would be self-abandoning again. But just really, where possible, avoiding those kind of manipulative or downright nasty, mean, accusatory exchanges.
Yeah.
And, you know, it might mean, you know, you need to take lots of breaks away from that person and then go back into it.
Yeah.
You know, my own divorce, you know, because we had two kids, we had assets together. He was sponsoring me living in the UAE. So it took a long time to navigate the kind of nuts and bolts of the divorce. And we used to meet up, not come to an agreement. And we used to just agree to meet the next week and so on and so on until we eventually had an agreement. And both of us avoided, well, you did this and this would never have happened if you'd done that. And there's, you know, once we go through that bargaining side of grief where we just either want the other person back, we just desperately don't want it to have happened. When we get more into, okay, this has happened, how can I make this work for me? How can I really, really make this work for me? And when I did my research, what came out with everybody I interviewed was a kind of a spiritual focus, really help people through just getting deeper into, and I don't mean religious, but that might have been the case for some people, but really spiritual principles of compassion, kindness, honesty, rigorous self-honesty. And they all came out of it really transformed. So eventually there was a part of them that was grateful for the experience.
Well, I definitely think that I was grateful for the experience because I actually learned to love myself, right? Eventually took me 20 years, 30 years, but I eventually did that. And I think I had to go through that process to come on the other side. And it's been 4 years now. My life has been transformative. And I'm not madly in love with myself. I do love myself and I'm very comfortable with myself. And you know, I won't attract that kind of vibration again. I mean, you know, and the thing is that we're good friends as well, which is great. Cause I think that for me, it was important to conduct myself in a particular manner, in a dignified manner, throughout the whole process. And I think it was still slightly selfish of me on some levels, because I think I do want to become bitter and I wanted to maintain myself. So I didn't want to, you know, I think I was protecting myself emotionally. But a couple of things I do have questions for. So for instance, firstly, my first question is, I've come across a lot of people who've been married to or with narcissists, believe it or not. I mean, one day last week, I had four people tell me that, four clients phone me up and say that what they're going through. When you're married to a narcissist, would a narcissist ever take the lead to divorce, or would it be that the other person in the partner in the marriage has decided they've had enough, or they recognize that they're married to a narcissist and they can't take anymore and they've had enough and then they choose to leave?
I don't know the statistics on this, and if you are listening to this and you want like someone really specialist on narcissism, I hope I've got her name right. There's a woman called Melanie Tonya Evans who specializes in relationships with narcissists.
Okay.
So I believe it could be either. He could pull the plug on it or she could pull the plug on it. But, you know, narcissists need to be with people that overgive, probably don't have a lot of self-confidence, and then they kind of ground down what little self-confidence and esteem that person may have had in the beginning. So there is an actual fit, and then, you know, what we would hope is, you know, that person says, right, you know what, I'm going into therapy, this is just terrible, what's happening to me, I you know, I've got no confidence anymore, and they start to grow and they start to grow, and then they kind of don't tolerate the narcissist anymore. The whole relationship begins to splinter, and that will usually provoke something quite nasty. But you know, I don't think narcissism is particularly new.
No.
I think there's more of it now because we are moving away from living as part of communities, which I have my own views on, and becoming islands. So there are more of it. It's me, 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 me.
Yeah. So that's one question I was going to ask, because I mean, I think, is it the fact that, because every day I'm talking to somebody and they're saying, well, my mother's a narcissist, or I've been married to a narcissist, or my boss a narcissist. And is it because we know the characteristics of a narcissist now, and we know that, you know, that, so that we can actually see that these people are narcissists, or the fact that there are more people who are narcissists?
You know, I think even if you, if you look at history and literature written, you know, there were these very self-centered, selfish bullies. We'd probably call them narcissists now, like incapable of like genuine empathy and things. So look, I mean, the good news is we're familiar. We've got the word for it now. We're familiar with it. And, you know, people are getting to know it. And obviously standing up for themselves, because a narcissist can only date somebody that actually is probably quite codependent and an overgiver.
Oh, really?
Otherwise it would never work.
Oh, really?
Somebody with like really strong sense of self and self-esteem would probably, I mean, I don't want to offend anybody, you know, if they've had an experience with it, but would probably sniff it out much quicker. Because a narcissist can only operate when someone is in a way idolizing them.
Okay. And the next question I had is, say, as we mentioned before, that you know, say if somebody has, they've come home, they've heard that their partner's had an affair, or that, you know, it's just broken them, and now they've decided they want to split up. Okay, I mean, the epicenter of that is say yesterday, right? And now they've decided, right, that's it. I'm not going to make this marriage work. I want him out of the house, or she out of the house. It's over. At one point, do they think, okay, I should look into doing this whole conscious uncoupling? Because the emotions are so raw at that point. Would it be a month later, 2 months, or 3 months down the line? Is it?
Well, I saw a couple who came to me about 2 days after he'd been busted.
Okay.
And they are happily married, and actually the whole process really strengthened their relationship, because it brought everything to this explosion where they were actually able to re-engage, but engage on a much more deeper, intimate level. So it was, you know, actually really worked in their favor. You know, I think if someone wants to do the conscious uncoupling process, if they're with, you know, a therapist who's doing it, the therapist will probably be able to slow down the whole process to hold that space for all the rage and all the upset, all the self-flagellation coming out, and really slow it down. But generally, to do the process, you would need an awareness, an ability just for a few minutes to just push aside the blame and look at yourself. I mean, I was speaking to someone, 2 days ago, actually, who is like right in the heat of betrayal and breakup, and she isn't ready yet to be able to do that work. But you know, in an hour session, maybe 5 minutes, she could spend kind of looking at herself. But you know, you're really juggling, because they need space to vent.
Yeah. I mean, so it varies by couple to couple, and individual to individual. Yeah. And so for the viewers, could you tell me, like you mentioned, they had a couple who had, I mean, the husband had been busted and then they came in. Can you talk through the process and like an average timeline? I know every couple is different, but what is the process? And when they, like from the time they call you and they say, right, we both, obviously do both have to say, okay, my husband's been busted, but we've decided that we need help and support. So what's the process for that? Is it that you see each person individually first, or do you see them as a couple, and then you see them every week as a couple, and do you give them homework to do in between? What's the whole process?
Yeah. Okay, what I normally do is I see them both individually, because sometimes there's more to the story than one spouse or one part of the couple knows. So generally I could, you know, they might be more transparent. So, and I try and establish in that session really, it's less the story about what's gone and it's more about motivation and willingness to rebuild. Or if that person is just already gone and just looking to get this job done and the divorce done as quickly as possible. So that I see them individually for that, and then make an assessment whether when we do work as a couple, how that is. Are we looking to uncouple because one of the parties is just an absolute no, or doesn't want to let go of the person that they're perhaps having an affair with, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. In which case you're helping them through an uncoupling. And it can just be with also one, it doesn't have to be with a couples. In fact, most people don't come in as couples.
And most people don't come in as couples. Yeah.
No. But then if they both want to rebuild, then yes, yeah. it's a process of kind of setting rules and setting boundaries, and they have exercises to do. And the person that has, you know, if it's an affair, the person that has been betrayed, we generally agree they get a lot of space to vent.
So you have
too quickly.
So you give them a space for a certain yeah. number of weeks to just vent, so they allow you know, and just allow them, and just you sit there and listen, yeah. allow them to give that opportunity for them to do that.
Well, and their spouse also, you know, also we agree how he or she receives that venting.
Mm.
Because I think, you know, often the person that's done the wrong, I put it in inverted commas because I think it does take two people to have
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
But the person that's done the wrong generally wants the whole thing dealt with really, really quickly. Right, well, it's done now. What are we doing moving on?
Yeah.
But it's not done for the person who's just found out. It is so not done. It's red yes. hot and alive.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. Because they just found out. I remember speaking yeah. to a lady. I mean, she didn't come in for any sessions in the end, but she was still a year on. She was fuming with her husband because she thought that she'd been happily married for 24 years and then found out he'd been having an affair and married somebody behind her back. For 3 years, and then she found out, obviously kicked him out, and then brought him back in again, and 6 months on, and she still was finding it hard to move on, which clearly there needs to be some intervention. But
I mean, in cases like that, because it does happen, we have like stuck grief, stuck resentment, where the victimization is so huge that it prevents moving on. And so that's when I would work with someone on, you know, what are you getting out of holding on to this? Mm. Where are you abandoning yourself to the degree he betrayed you?
Mm.
And really sort of like work on sort of self-empowerment, really. Like, okay, is there a motivation to make this your catalyst for change and empowerment?
Yeah, okay.
And if they really didn't want to, if they just wanted to come in and vent every week, I would probably name that. We're not doing therapy here.
Okay, for them to come in. And how long would you allow an individual to come in to vent? Or is it unlimited? Or is there a point where you're thinking, okay, you've vented for a good number of weeks now, and it's time for you to think about really moving forward?
You know, I don't think there's a one size fits all here. Sometimes I can't take it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm human. And
are you as a therapist?
Gently... Yes.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
I'm human. Of course I am. and I might just, you know, I would gently say to that person, you know, what are you getting out of these sessions?
Mm.
And would you be interested in moving this forward?
Mm.
How do you see this going with us? Because if we can just create an idea of a goal where they want to go to, then that's a North Star I can kind of hold them to account.
Mm. So that's just interesting that you just said that, you know, you need to, because I mean, as a therapist, how do you take, you know, when somebody's venting for a certain length of time, it's obviously affecting you. And so how do you take care of yourself? Is it just the venting, or is it could be dealing with some of these problems?
I think because, you know, I think probably more than a therapist, my coach training is really, you know, it's really about positive transformation.
Mm.
And as long if we overstay the time in the problem and the victimization and the how I had been wronged, then there is no positive transformation. So I hope to offer them lots of love and support and compassion.
Yeah.
But it's not a topic I'm going to ignore.
And so you put it to the forefront for them, right?
Yeah. Usually fairly regularly.
And do people start realizing that they really have to start making decision to move on and things? That they start thinking, or they're thinking, no, I'm not ready, and they still need to vent. And what happens in that situation? I mean,
okay. You know, I don't know whether this is a right or wrong approach. I think probably some people really say to me, God, yeah, you're so right. I am so tired of this. Show me how I can move on. And, yeah. You know, we do some great work. And others, the sessions fizzle out because they're really not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So it really, it really depends on the person. Sometimes I say to people, look, you know, if you've got a close friend or someone you can vent with, do all your venting and we'll use the session for growth, like a different kind of growth.
Yeah.
So I do say that to people sometimes. So it's very much based on the individual. Some people are so incredibly wounded and maybe have been victims throughout their whole life that it's going to take a lot longer for them. Maybe they've never been heard before. Maybe they've never actually voiced any of this stuff. So of course they, you know, once they've got a voice, I don't want to shut them up, but it's really individual.
Yeah. Okay. And on average, what's a healthy timeline to be going through this whole process of coaching and therapy when you're going through a divorce?
Do you know, I remember interviewing a psychotherapist who, and she sort of, I think she said like she'd had one client 10 years and she just like sent her out of psychotherapy into coaching.
Mm.
And, you know, for me, that is way, way too long to be.
Yeah,
to
I mean, 10
but,
years.
But, I mean, that's, yeah. I feel very uncomfortable putting a timeline on because I think that anyone listening to this could feel a pressure.
You know, fair enough.
When we have something like this happen to us, generally our ego, our self-esteem is so fragile and fractured, we can use any opportunity to shame ourselves. Mm. Oh my God, she says I've got to be in growth before 3 months and it's been 2 years and I'm still here.
No, fair enough. So I understand that.
There's always a good time to start and there's always a good time to just have the door open for a different commitment, a commitment to empowering yourself through it.
Now I remember, I mean, listen, I was working with you and when we were talking about my marriage and I think you're obviously gently bringing up the fact that, is this the right thing? And of course, I mean, I know what you were telling me, but I wasn't ready to accept it. Right. And that took some time, right? At least a couple of years, I think. Because it's true.
Yeah, I mean, we can all see it in other people. We can see it in our friends. We can see this is going nowhere. Whatever it is, it could be job, career, relationship. And I'm definitely not one to break up relationships. I'm more one to sort of encourage confronting the relationship rather than burying heads and just checking out on Netflix, you know, night after night. But I can't actually remember where I was going with that, Samira.
No, it's the fact that I have spent 2 years coming to see you to discuss my marriage.
So we can all see what people should do.
Yeah.
But it is such a process of, you know, if you try and wake people up too quickly, they'll generally get defensive and disappear. So it's really holding it gently.
Yeah.
Sort of pushing gently, but not so much that you're going to traumatize someone. Like you said, you needed all that time to become ready for what was a huge step in your life. Huge step.
I mean, I wasn't ready to face it. It was just too much for me to face. And in the end, even though I was trying to make it work for God knows how long when it wasn't working, and I kind of really had, I was just picking up the crumbs for that. I mean, I'm laughing now about it, but I really was. It was my ex-husband who started pulling away, and I felt that there was some kind of distance and him talking about a trial separation. And I thought, well, what does a trial separation mean? How long is a trial separation? And we weren't even on the same page on the trial separation. And when I realized that it wasn't 3 months, but it was going to be a 6-month trial separation, I realized that for me, that was wrong. And that he wanted to end this, but he was trying to, in my viewpoint, that's what I thought anyway. And when I realized that my marriage was over, I remember having that conversation with him and just looking out in that dark window. I mean, it was like looking outside the window, it's pitch black. and really being scared because I realized that my marriage was over. And I thought, well, I spent 5 years building this place up, this home, creating this home. This is my home. And this relationship, whether it was good or bad, it was still a relationship. I had something, I thought. And I was very, very scared, right? I was very scared. I didn't know at that moment, where was it going to be? Where was I going to move to? What was my life going to be like? It was very, very scary. And it just took baby steps to move out. First, it was the fact that I was actually moving out that place and moving into a shared accommodation to be around people that I kind of knew who were decent people. And then, you know, doing self-care, like I was seeing you once a week, and then I was exercising every day. And then I remember in the evenings after work, I'd go into this cafe to eat food, have my evening meal, because I was going, I didn't want to cook in that place, shared house. And the fact that there was me and then just single people scattered around the whole cafe so eating by themselves, and thinking, how sad is this? This is what my life has come to. But I think I needed to go through that process. And I think it was a deep learning process for me to realize that, well, why did I end up marrying somebody who wasn't even in love with me, right? And you know, and I broke up, and, you know, I'm 5 years on. I obviously have moved on so far, leaps and bounds. So if there is anyone watching or listening to this, is the fact that you may be in a very, very dark place right now if you're listening to this, but you do move forward, and it's about baby steps.
Self-care and self-compassion are really, really key.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when we're, for a lot of people, we, you know, that we have like our attachment system, which, without going into it, we're really not that much different with like than babies with their mothers.
Yeah.
And so when our partner of however many months, years, decades is no longer our person, our mummy, if you like, not that you might look at them as a mother figure, we go into like, actually, you know, it gets quite, it's traumatic, depression, a lot of anxiety. Some people need medication to help them through that period, because it is so physically felt. No appetite, everything goes grey, suddenly there's no goals for the future, you know, all that kind of thing. So just putting one foot in front of the other, and even if you're in a singles cafe, feeding yourself healthy, nutritious food, doing some sport, even though you don't want to and your body feels really heavy, doing some kind of meditation to just calm that limbic system, which is in a state of just chronic fear. So that's really important as well, you know, in addition to the whole attitude one takes towards the other person involved.
Okay. So, I mean, we've been talking about conscious uncoupling. The other part I want to speak to you about, because I have clients like this, and they're situations where they can't split up from their husband or their partner, their spouse. Mainly these are women who don't have a skill set. They've been spent their time, they may have given up their career, and they or they're not making, even if they left and had a skill set, it would not be making the money that they need to in order to maintain a certain lifestyle, right? As in, like, sending the kids to private school, things like that. Yet they cannot stand their husband, because they could be a high functioning alcoholic, disrespecting them. They're seen as invisible, the women, the partners are cheating on them, but they have not got the strength nor the financial means to leave. And I know a client already who is counting the days and the hours and the months of when her children are a specific age so she can actually walk out of her husband. She can't stand him, and she is on antidepressants. And she finds it obviously very difficult to deal with. And I know another lady, another client of mine, who's going through that. And of course, I've worked, you know, using RTT, but, you know, on a day-to-day basis, what would you say, what kind of advice, given you have been doing a lot of this work, what kind of advice could you give someone who is in a marriage and they're finding it very difficult? They're not ready to, or they don't have the financial means to leave, or they're waiting for a specific moment in a point in their life that they'd be ready to leave.
I think pretty much the same thing, that, you know, we all need to feel that we have some power.
Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes, you know, if we're just focusing on them and how awful it is and how awful they are, then we are staying in victimization.
Yeah.
But actually, the choice may be, mm-hmm. I am choosing to stay because mm-hmm. I want to see the kids through school,
yeah.
because I like this lifestyle.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a choice. So you're no longer a victim here. So it's really always gently bringing the focus back on the person and not the one that they've got the resentment to, and encouraging lots of self-development, lots of self-awareness work, because sometimes people then become ready to make a change because, you know, sometimes people realize that they are investing in being a victim. It's actually a comfort zone. Oh, well, I can't.
Mm.
You don't have to challenge yourself then.
Mm.
No, it's, you just have to put up with it, and it's sacrificial. That's not what we're on this planet for. So really working on bringing it back to them. And I, you know, I would always get permission first. You know, if we're going to work together, can we work on you growing rather than us just focusing on how bad he is or she is?
I think sometimes... And one or two of them obviously have been working on themselves, but it is finding it very difficult because that individual is abusive, or especially when they're an alcoholic and they're very abusive, yet they don't want to leave. And again,
that is on them. And again, yeah. more and more work is needed.
Mm.
It's, you know, because I work up, you know, a fair amount with addiction, and it's like, yeah, but if he or she stopped drinking, everything would be okay. Mm. But the reality is they're not. So looking at the reality right now, what are we going to do? Because again, it's the victimization over and over again.
Mm.
I mean, I know, it's so hard, and it has to be, you know, it's such a tender, tender area. But there is absolutely no gain in putting all the focus on how bad the other person is.
So what kind of personal self-growth could they do if they didn't even have the means to come and see you, for instance?
I mean, there is a myriad of self-help books around. Mm-hmm. And just get on programs and don't just read the book,
mm-hmm.
but do the exercises as well. There's mm-hmm. online courses.
Yeah.
You know, Brené Brown has
yes.
some.
Yeah.
I mean, so many people have courses that you can do. You know, you're in a child healing, so you can go on quite a self-development journey even if you don't have the resources.
Yeah.
And you might even find a buddy, like a friend that you can kind of share your insights with rather than sharing your victim.
Yeah.
You know, sharing and then kind of like setting little goals.
Like little goals like what?
Well, it might be a little goal as in, you know, by the end of 2020 or 2019, I can protect myself against my husband's abuse or my wife's abuse,
mm-hmm.
and setting up boundaries.
Mm.
Or it could be I've taken the first couple of steps to create independence in my life.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a retraining or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just the commitment. Okay, I am no longer a victim here. Mm. I am in the process of creating an independent, healthy life for myself.
Mm-hmm. And what way, I mean, I was just curious to say, when, in order to protect themselves, how do you think, so if somebody had a goal to protect themselves by end of 2020, for instance, what kind of protection would that be? It's because the more they're doing these exercises through these self-help books, I know hypnosis, RTT, and hypnosis that you've done and I've done has helped as well. But are there anything else? Is there anything else that they could do? What form? Other forms?
Well,
of
I think. Yeah, I mean, definitely all the boundary setting stuff is really, really good. Join the 12-step group, Codependence Anonymous, or Al-Anon, which is the Partners of Alcoholics Anonymous, of Alcoholics, because they're completely free of charge and they have an incredibly powerful program of change.
Yeah.
It's not going to cost anything. And if you can't physically get to the meetings, which I always recommend, there's lots of online meetings.
Okay.
So
you can do online.
Developing, absolutely.
Oh, wow.
Not developing is an excuse.
Oh, really? Okay. That's really interesting.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, what I'm curious about, what the hold of being a victim is. What's the lure of staying a victim?
Okay, so that's the question they should be asking themselves.
Maybe.
And do you think they will ask those questions? Is that quite a difficult question to a bitter pill to take?
I think if somebody's never done any sort of development or inquiry before, yes, yeah. They wouldn't know how to. So it's approaching it in different ways. It's approaching it as like, you know, there is absolutely another way.
Mm.
And a lovely prayer, if you like, is I surrender this. I am willing to see this another way.
Mm.
Show me another perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Because we tend to get stuck in our perspectives on things.
Mm. That's really good.
And often, you know, the 12-step groups and counselors and coaches and books and things, they're showing other perspectives on the situation.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. I'd like that. Show me another perspective. That's very good. Most people We have to reframe. Okay, that's a really good one. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Right, okay, Lisa. I mean, it's been wonderful talking to you. So if people have listened to this and they want to reach out to you and do some work with you, how can they find you? Please tell me how they can find you and where they can read more about yourself.
They can find me at lisalawscoaching.com.
Mm-hmm.
And WhatsApp or email me, please, because the telephone number isn't working at the moment. Just contact me and we can arrange. I offer a 20-minute free of charge consultation call, mm-hmm. to see what you want to, you know, what your objectives are and if we're the right fit to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're not, I generally refer.
Okay. And so you do a lot of online coaching and therapy sessions as well as face-to-face, correct?
I do, particularly at the moment because I just relocated back to the UK from the UAE. Mm-hmm. So I'm offering discounted as well online sessions, both in Skype and phone. Plus, I also offer intensive. So if, I used to do it in when I was in the UAE, people would come over from Saudi for 2 or 3 days and we'd do half days and do a lot of really intensive work together.
Okay.
So that is also an option in the UK. So,
okay, brilliant, brilliant.
Otherwise, your weekly Skype or Botim call.
Do you think the intensives are really helping you to move forward, or do you think that sometimes it can be a bit too much, or you just gauge it, but depending on the individual that you're who's you're doing the discovery call with?
What I generally would do is before they jumped into an intensive, mm-hmm. I would probably work with them for 2 or 3 sessions first anyway.
Okay.
Because you know, that building of trust and also really kind of getting the nub of what they want to have happen to them.
Yeah.
You know, I probably wouldn't get if they arrived on my doorstep and we didn't know each other, because there's a natural and healthy defense that's up with people before they, you know, are prepared to open their hearts.
Mm. Mm. Thank you, Lisa. That's been amazing.
You're welcome.
Long live conscious uncoupling. And I think Absolutely. It's really growing a lot more now. I mean, you're seeing that people are talking about it a lot more than they, I mean, it has such more of a positive connotation as opposed to the word divorce.
Yes. Right? And Catherine Woodward Thomas, just to do a plug, because I'm also a coach for it, she's also written a book called Calling in the One. So this is really, if you're convinced that there's
You've
no good men
to
out
me
there,
as well.
Blah, blah, blah. Actually, it's like, okay, who do I need to be being to actually call in this amazing guy?
Mm.
And so it's, again, it's very much self-focused rather than how terrible men are or women.
Well, by the way, I spoke to a lady only a week ago, and she told me, and she'd been in a very abusive, a narcissistic abusive relationship for 31 years. And she is a coach, and she does a lot of spiritual work herself. And she wrote down exactly her perfect guy. And she said that she felt it. She used to feel that feeling of as if she'd already had him, that, you know, who's in her life. And that, you know, she just felt that energy all the time and talking about it. She went to this town hall event where actually, in fact, it was the wrong thing that she was meant to go. She was meant to go to that. And she ended up going to it by accident. And apparently there was somebody who was having a tough time with their throat, and I think he was choking or something, I don't know, something happened. And she shouted out the side of the room, you know, do that's your throat chakra, you need to do this, this, and this. On the other side of the room, there's another individual who said exactly the same thing. And she said, who is this person? So she met this person. And I think at the end of the evening, I think everyone was hugging each other. So she hugged this individual and she felt this kind of connection with this person. Mm. Anyway, I didn't really think anything of it, but it was just this weird connection that they had. And a couple of weeks later, they met somewhere else. It's a fair or something. And she hugged him then and said, oh, you know, lovely to meet you. And he said, oh, yeah, everything in my life has just gone wrong. It's, you know, I lost my job, I've this, that, and the other. And she said, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. She said, no, it's just the universe clearing out everything for something new. And they hugged each other then. And then literally 5 minutes later, she went to see this tarot card reader or medium or something. And she was with her friend. And she said, oh, are you both planning on getting married? Because you look as if you seem to be plan to go, I need to get married. And and she said, no, we're just friends. We're not same-sex kind of couple and things. And she said, anyway, a couple of weeks later, she met this guy. And they hit it off completely. And he was a perfect man. And they got married. And now they're living happily ever after. So
happily ever after, love it. Absolutely. And she was ready, she was absolutely ready. So yeah, fantastic.
All right, Lisa, thank you very, very much for your time. Thank you so much, and hope to speak to you soon. Okay,
yeah, absolutely, thanks so much.